thanks everybody who kind of made the effort and, you know, took your lawn chair and your chances and came out this morning. No rain. Although it did kind of shower while I was setting up this morning, and I was like, oh, come on. Not seriously. But no, it didn't. It stopped, and this is great. So we're together in person, and it feels like am I weary of it? I'm not weary of doing it. I'm weary of doing it alone in a room, of saying we're on Treaty One land when we virtually gather, and it is so, it feels so deep down good to be able to say in person, on land. More of that in a moment, but this is where we gather. This is where we're made welcome by the first peoples of this continent, and I'm really grateful. Last time I'm going to look in the camera like I was paying attention to it, but a really warm welcome to anyone who's joining us that way. I know there are some folks, at least according to the data, there's some of you out there this morning. Thank you for joining us this way. I'm going to make a concerted effort to keep in mind that there's a community out there as well as a community right here gathered this morning, but I also want to acknowledge that there are going to be some parts of what we do today that are going to be difficult to translate that way. And they're going to be contextual because I couldn't resist the context. You know, it just felt like it's been so long, and we need to lean into the fact that we have some humans together in this space this morning. So that's a reflection of our opportunities and of our limitations, and there's nothing new about that. No matter how we gather, one of the things we would typically do at this point in our time together is we would stop to breathe together. And one of the reasons that we do that is because breathing together is grounding. In the blurb this week, I asked folks to send me what it meant to them to be grounded. And aside from Jane, who was on it, I didn't hear from anybody, which might mean any number of things. So it's not an indictment. It's just, again, it's just an observation. But y'all have your phones. If you have any thoughts, my cell number, grab your phones, and you can send these things to me right now, and I'll read them out, and we'll share some ideas, okay? When I come across people who know and embrace their strengths and abilities, that's what I see as grounded. Maybe it's something akin to seeing people live full lives and feel free to have all the emotions and experiences of living one's life. I think when people understand themselves and pursue what they can achieve, and on the flip side, know what their limits are, whether those are self-imposed or otherwise, I see that as grounded. So that's what Jane wrote about, what she sees as being grounded. I did invite people to be anonymous in this, and so I'm going to treat the texts as anonymous. And if you want to, if you're out there and you want to say that's mine, then you go right ahead. So this one says, feeling connected but not restrained. I think there's some real overlap between that idea and what Jane wrote as well, those sort of those two sides. Seeing someone who was grounded is seeing someone who has stress but are content with it, knowing it doesn't hinder them and enjoying life moving forward. Seeing someone who was grounded is seeing someone who has stress but are content with it, knowing it doesn't hinder them and enjoying life moving forward. These are awesome. By the way, I'm not asking for these so I can correct them. You know, just in case you were wondering. To have a clear perspective from where they are at that moment in life, the benefits and the challenges. Being grounded to me means being able to see reality around us and have acceptance. That also means being able to be in the moment, listening, watching, appreciating. These are all so great. It's awesome. I guess if we want to know who's sending them, we can just look around at who's still typing, and then if I read any more, we'll busted. Tim, are you gonna hit send on that, or are you just texting somebody? While we're waiting, there we go. So Anonymous says, reconnecting to humanity and realizing that there are many experiences of life that are not mine and that may not line up with my personal ideology grounds me. So that the realization that there are many experiences that are not mine and that might not line up with my personal ideology is what is grounding. Yeah, I understood that correctly. Okay. And then from people out there in the wider world, not here in the room, to have perspectives formed in fact-based reality. To have perspectives formed in fact-based reality. Those are all great. I wish we could have been, this is not a lament. It would have been lovely to be able to have them all in front of us at the same time visually, you know, and if we'd been in a different space, we might have been able to do that. But if you want them, I can compile them. Just let me know. I can send them to you. But that's a great collection of ideas about being grounded. Grounding is one of those terms we toss it around a lot these days in our culture in general. But at least if you're like me, you probably haven't stopped before you were invited to kind of go, what do I think that means? What do I think is grounded? And yet we still have this experience of it, right? Like we meet people every once in a while in our lives and we walk away from the encounter and we're like, that's a grounded person. And we might not even have thought a lot about what we mean by it, but we know we've experienced something that word feels like it represents for us. So just a couple of quick thoughts from outside sources on that, and then we're going to do something that actually kind of enacts this just a little bit. The short version, generally sort of a shared understanding of the term, is that being grounded is the ability to be completely aware and conscious during the present moment. And it's not about defining the moment. So it's not about kind of going, being perfect, completely aware when it's all good. It's just being completely aware of the present moment, period. It's about being here rather than being called away by either the unchangeable past or the unknowable future. Tricky that, right? This moment right here, like right now, this is the one that we have. A Buddhist acquaintance recently said to me, the future never arrives. It's true, right? When is that? We have this moment. Those same ideas in the collected sayings of Jesus in Matthew, that kind of Jesus' greatest hits list that somebody thought sounded like a sermon. Anyway, not going there. One of them says this, therefore do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. So that's kind of the rabbi's version of that same idea. Michael Daniels, in his book Shadow Self Spirit, explains that groundedness is associated with, quote, an experience of clarity, wholeness, rightness, and harmony. Associated with an experience of clarity, wholeness, rightness, and harmony. So this is what the mystics in lots of different traditions end up pointing us toward sort of over and over again, is that the experience or understanding that everything belongs is central to being grounded. But the mystics also tend to remind us that it can take some work to be aware of that. Even if that's true, whether we're aware of it or not, being aware of it is a different matter. And it takes some doing to do that. We're not likely to just stumble into the experience of everything belongs. We actually have to seek it. And we're going to see as we keep kind of working our way into this series of explorations on doubt and belief that seeking that experience of everything belongs, of groundedness, that's worth doing. That's a good thing to invest some of our life energy in, for sure. But it's not something that we can't just consume it. We can't just go get it, you know? Groundedness is super helpful, not least of all because it equips us to sort of let a lot of things roll off us rather than disrupting our sense of who we are and how the world is working or not working at any given moment. And it helps us to just generally be less reactive. We live in a society, though, and I realize not everyone would share this lens, but my experience would suggest that we live in a society where a lot of money and a lot of effort gets spent on trying quite deliberately to keep us out of this state of being, to have us not be grounded. And I'm not talking about some kind of conspiracy theory. I'm just talking about the logical outworkings of things like capitalism without checks or balances, or unbalanced emphasis on radical individualism or uncritical boosterism of, you know, contemporary and Western ideas of things like democracy. Like, you can take any of those ideas and sort of see good in them. You can also take them and kind of put them on turbos and take away the questions about them and the reservations about them and end up with a culture in which being grounded becomes almost impossible. It takes a great deal of energy. Grounded people are harder to manipulate. Grounded people are harder to market to. Grounded people are harder to mislead. They're harder to redirect because they're just less likely to be looking for a short-term way of coping with the stress that comes from either dwelling in the past or being distracted by what's yet to come. They're just harder to knock off their pins. When we're grounded, we're just a lot less likely to be reactive. Now, that could sound like an awfully long run-up to breathing together, but as I hope you'll see shortly, it's all sort of what we're exploring together today. So there's lots of simple exercises that can help us engage with something like groundedness since we're outside today, and that hasn't happened for us as a community since last August, at which time I went back and checked my notes. We were here, and one of the things that I was talking about, according to my notes at least, was that we were in a conversation at that time with Creative Manitoba about getting back into the room in the fall and gathering, right? And we've been poking around at venues again. Like it's remarkable how how similar a space it is a year on. And yet, I mean, things have changed as well. And I don't want to be dismissive about that. It was just interesting to kind of go, yeah, this is obviously, being together is obviously a thing that we really are missing and really want to do. And anytime we get a little glimmer that might be the case, we just start doing our homework. So just in case, just in case it'll work, we're ready. But today we're outside, and I'm so glad we could do this, and so we're going to take advantage of that. So if you're sitting somewhere where most of you are, where you can actually touch the physical earth for this exercise, that's even better. I realize the grass is a little bit, the ground's a little bit damp from all the beautiful rain we've had, so you might not want to hop out of your chair, but if you do, get yourself where you're comfy, but somewhere where you can touch the earth, whether that's with your hands or your feet or both, but just actually feel like you're conscious of being present on the dirt, you know? And then what I want to invite us to do together is to breathe deeply. Any rhythm at all will do. We're not going to sort of say this is the rhythm we'll use together. You choose. But while you're breathing, so breathe in, and then while you're cradling your breath, what I would invite you to do is to take note of two things that are coming into you through your senses. So things that you hear or see or smell, feel, taste. Be aware of two things that are coming into you through your senses, and then sort of name them, and then pause with each one. So just take a couple of deep cradled breaths with each one of those and just be aware of that. If a thought comes into your mind, you just name it and let it go. Just breathe and be aware of that. Okay? We'll take some time to do that. Because of the way we're wired as human beings, if anything that you experienced when you stopped to do that is something you want to have stick with you beyond the experience, when you have a moment, write it down. If we don't stop with the good things, they don't stick. The bad things stick automatically because that's how we've evolved, right? Like the bad things will kill you so you don't forget them, but the good things can kind of be like, where did that go? So sometimes we have to actually take a moment and kind of go, I need to remember this and engage our bodies as well as our minds and our spirits and that stuff. One of the reasons I wanted to start with a grounding exercise today is because this series that we're doing on exploring doubt and belief is about to move into unpacking a stage that that I think a lot of us will identify with, and one where grounding is very important. So if you've been keeping track at all or following along in the series, we've dug into stages 0, 1, and 2. So we've sort of considered the utter self-centeredness of stage 0, the deep and established dualism of stage 1, and sort of the pragmatic, action-oriented self-confidence of stage 2. And we've used these short identifiers for each stage. So we used the identifier of egocentricity, also infancy, but we sort of parked more on egocentricity for stage 0, simplicity for stage 1, and complexity for stage 2. The short identifier for stage 3 is perplexity. So we've got egocentricity, simplicity, complexity, and now perplexity. Hence the importance of grounding. In stage 3, we tend to just toss everything into the air. And we do it often with good motives. We do it because we are authentically thinking critically. We are authentically questioning. We are honest as much as we're able in this process and authentic in it. And we also, in that honest questioning, in this stage, we deconstruct. We distrust. We look for our bias, conscious or otherwise. We're suspicious of authority. Like, we just disassemble everything in stage 3. And we'll get into the kind of the details of that. We'll go through that same grid that I've been using for the other stages, probably next week, perhaps a week after. But we'll break it down so we can kind of see how this compares to the other stages in terms of the typical things for the stage, definers for the stage. But for now, what I want to point out is that in stage 3, there's a whole lot of shaking going on. And for some of us, for many people, that shaking can lead to a loss of any sense of community or connection to something bigger. It's not an unusual outcome of that process of questioning and examining and being suspicious of sort of everything, including all of our things that we carried in. But that makes it hard to be connected. I have an ongoing conversation right now with a 20-something who, like lots of people that age, is they're just really struggling to find a meaning framework that can help their life make sense. And this is a smart, motivated person. They are a voracious reader and podcast consumer. They're a deep thinker. I would say an old soul, if that's a framework that's meaningful to you. They're somebody whose personal life is, they're surrounded by love and support, like they're in a good situation to be an explorer, and they're kind of got an ongoing crisis happening. They're not struggling with their world being in upheaval in some of those ways that would be about the bottom of the pyramid. There's a bigger picture than that. I had a different conversation with somebody else in that demographic last week who commented that it's hard to imagine a good future when you've got climate scientists telling you that the planet might be largely uninhabitable for humans by 2080 if we carry on being heedless about the way we live on it now. It's hard to be hopeful when your world is on fire, right? It really is. And in stage 3, it can feel like the world is on fire. It can feel like nothing is like it appears to be, like nobody can be trusted. It's a stage that can be liberating in lots of ways, but it can also leave us feel like we don't know how to, or maybe we don't know if we want to connect with others in our search for what we find believable or trustable. That just can get really, really hard to do in stage 3. So, lots of people end up, when they kind of hit this stage, and the pragmatic, self-interested, self-confident action orientation of stage 2 starts to fail, and they hit stage 3, they end up going alone. You know? Lots of folks in stage 3 cannot find a community that can embrace or support them in that process, in that stage. And when it comes to religious communities in particular, let me just be really blunt. Most churches are stage 1 and stage 2 institutions. Stage 3 is way too disruptive to fit inside most institutional frameworks. Just doesn't work. So people that are committed to continuing to explore beyond stages one and two can readily find themselves feeling unable to connect with a community. I know I can be a bit brokered recordish, you know, about this. Just as a curiosity, how many of you like feel like that metaphor, that image of broken record, like is that a meaningful image? You know, if you put a vinyl platter on a turntable and you put a needle on it, a physical needle on it, and it comes to a break in the vinyl or a deep scratch in the vinyl, what it does is it bounces and it goes back and it plays the section before it, or and it bounces and it goes back and it plays the section and it bounces and it, right? That's what happens physically. The reason I wanted to take the time, and it's not because anybody needed to know that, but because to me, that's what this stage can feel like. Right, you're kind of going along. You got the song of your life playing. You kind of got it figured out. Stage two is kind of like that. You figured out who the winners are, and you're with the winners. You're one of them. You know who your tribe is. You know how the song goes. And you just hit this thing that breaks it up. And it keeps breaking it up. In any case. What it can kind of be a broken record about, among other things, is that the table exists for this exact reason. It exists to provide space for exactly this kind and stage of exploration. Not just that, of course, but really close to the center of, we're going to make space, we're going to make room for exploring what we believe. That's about this stage. It's one of the reasons that we are as unstructured as we are. When people ask me to try to describe the table, there's a couple things that I say typically in a short conversation. One is that this is a community that it's easy to join. All you do is show up. And it's easy to leave. All you do is stop showing up. And that's important. That's essential to it feeling like the kind of place where you actually have the freedom to explore. You got to be free to come when you come and leave when you leave. Otherwise, it's not this stage, whatever else it is. It doesn't mean it has no value, but it means it's not this. So that's important. And the other thing that I have started to say to people, or as over the years I've kind of gathered experiences in this community, and I try to represent it to folks, because they, you know, when people find out you kind of do what I do in a community, they just expect you to roll out the strategy, you know, like to kind of give you the business card, the elevator speech, whatever version of what the community is about. And so I found a short sentence helpful in those conversations. It often leads to longer conversations, but one of the short sentences I like at this stage in our community's life is that I feel like at the table we're trying to do together something that literally millions of people are finding themselves feeling like they have to do alone. Maybe it's because I have decades of conversations with those people in my memory and in my heart, but that, don't use the phrase lightly, that breaks my heart. That is understandable and not necessary. We can make space for this together. We really can. And sometimes it's just ripping hard work. There's no doubt about it. And there can be all kinds of downsides and so on and so forth, right? But I mean, people do not have to end up alone because they hit stage three in their journey. They don't have to. Some point in the coming weeks, we're going to spend a whole talky bit poking around in the downsides of being a stage three community, because there really are some, and knowing what they are can help us be aware of them and navigate them, I think, with more grace and more wisdom, more kindness. There really are some, and they're pretty, when I get there and I name them, you'll be going like, oh yeah, you know, like you'll recognize them from our community and from your own life experience. They make sense. But in many ways, I think it's a fair characterization of the table at this point in its life to help us think about ourselves as having many stage three people as part of our community. It's not like it's an either or thing, but there's lots of us in that stage, I think, doing this. And I don't think it's right for us to examine other experiences and ideas and leave our own unexamined. Like, that would just be a failure, I think, in our context. For now, though, what I want to do is suggest that there is something that we can all do to not have our stage three explorations send us off into the community free zone. send us off into a space where we feel like we don't identify with anybody else and we can't risk being a part of something bigger lest it reveal itself to be yet another untrustworthy institution. Like, God knows we got a collection, right, of those already, and all sorts of reasons to be suspicious of anything collective. I think there's something we can do to help us not have the legitimate concern about that and the understandable fears and observations in that direction add up to us not being connected to anything collective. And the way I want to describe it this morning is to say that that something is grounding. And here's what I mean by that in this context. And I'm going to go back to that Jesus teaching that I mentioned for a moment here. One of the things that I think makes a library like the Bible, this kind of collection of stories about people wrestling in their own contexts with their faith and their belief and how to live those things, I think one of the things that makes a library like that dangerous is that you can kind of cherry pick like tiny sections, right? And you can pick out a verse or a chunk of a verse and you can use it to just clobber the hell out of somebody. And that's one of the reasons that I like to take the ideas that I find in the Bible and see where else they might show up in other traditions. What I'm looking for is what I like to call enduring wisdom. What I'm looking for when I do that are four ideas or perspectives that seem to thrive in a lot of different settings and a lot of different times and a lot of different traditions. In other words, I'm looking for ideas that seem to have a wider shared human experience rather than sort of camping out on this particular collection of human experiences that are between the pages of, you know, this volume that we've named the Bible. Maybe you could say that what I'm looking for is the common good. I'm looking for what we share as humans when I do that. And one of the biggest things that we share, one of the actual biggest things that we share is the earth. Like, it's this thing that we make home out of, because that's our job as a species. We make homes of the earth. In a lot of traditions, the earth is regarded or understood as a parent, as that which gives us life and also sustains us and guides us, sort of foundational. And in a lot of traditions, that parent image for earth is one of mother, right? So you don't have to travel very far in spiritual traditions to encounter earth as mother. In fact, there are people in our community for whom and who've taught us about this beautiful, astonishing idea of the earth as mother. Jesus was from a patriarchal society, and so most of his images of earth as the source of life are father images, because that's the cultural context he was in. If you think, when you think about earth as nurturant, if you think about earth as parent, then you've probably got a big enough funnel for gender expansive ideas that go beyond that mother-father imagery. And I think that's essential to this exploration as well. Lots of us grew up in cultural frameworks where we haven't been taught to acknowledge that earth as parent framework and listen to it. Some of us, as soon as we get into earth as mother, our fundamentalist radar starts to beep. Whether we still operate under that radar or not, it's still got power in it and it's functioning back there somewhere. Sometimes that's annoying and sometimes it's distressing, but it still does that. And we're like, you mean like Gaia? You mean like, you know, okay, you mean like weird new agey stuff? Is that what you mean? Whatever. I'm not concerned about the implications of this, but that's, if you're, that radar is beeping, that might be why. We haven't been taught to think about earth as parent and not be afraid of that idea. And we need to address that. In fact, lots of us have been taught to think of the earth primarily in terms of what we can extract from it, which of course is one of the fundamental idea disconnects that happened as essential to colonialism, right? You got a group of people that are already living with the earth and another group of people who show up to say, what can we take from the earth? Let's make a deal. And they're not working with the same understandings of earth at all in the process. And we get the mess we have from that. So this is a big, important idea, right? When we're looking for what we have in common, what we gather around, the literal biggest possibility of our commonness, of our common good, is the earth. Like, that's actually the biggest thing that we have in common as humans. It is the ground in groundedness. So that Jesus teaching that I quoted, as we have it in translation, Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow. Well, that's a nice idea, a little hard to execute, at least in my experience. So how to proceed? Well, interestingly enough, there's a clue in the text itself, because the verse that I quoted in most English translations starts with the word therefore. And if you see the word therefore in a text, you should look what it's there for, right? Like what, therefore what? Like what came before it? Why are we making this idea so important? And if we back up into that text, one of the things we find out is that what the word points backwards to is this whole chunk of teachings where Jesus the rabbi is basically illustrating from the earth. And he's saying, you know, like, pay attention to how the flowers operate. Pay attention to how the grass operates. Pay attention to how the animals function. And what you're going to find if you pay attention to that is that as a human, if you live rightly with those things, everything thrives. And we don't have to worry about tomorrow. We can deal with the challenges of today. We can be present to the moment. We can be grounded. But the path, the rabbi says, to all of that is paying attention to how the earth works and working with it, not just saying, what can I take from it? Now, Jesus uses father language when he talks about the spiritual reality of this truth, because again, he's from a patriarchal society. He could use mother language, he could use parent language, the message would be the same. If we live right with this earth, which is, our quantum physicists would say to us, not only stranger than we can perceive, but stranger than we can imagine in terms of energy and where that energy comes from. When Jesus talks about that mystery, he talks about it as a parent. I think that's fascinating. I think that's shared wisdom. To seek to be grounded is to seek to know how interconnected and interdependent everything actually is. So we're going to come to this in our stages as well, but for now I wanted to stop here to remind myself and to remind all of us how critical it is to start there in that grounded place, and how critical it is to return there, and how critical it is to gradually, through practice, learn to live in a grounded state of being. So when we go exploring, we don't forget where we belong and we don't forget what we all have in common. So we stay grounded. And we begin to understand that we can be grounded together. That we don't have to abandon the ship of community because we're exploring what we believe. We have something bigger than our exploration in common. That's where I'm going to leave that idea for today. That's enough talky bit talking.